The World Cup opening delivered both sporting drama and unexpected political theater, with the U.S. routing Paraguay 4-1, while Senator Marco Rubio and Governor Gavin Newsom shared a VIP box. The bipartisan optics were striking given the sharp political divisions that characterize most public interactions between prominent Republicans and Democrats.
The shared VIP appearance suggests both politicians recognize the World Cup's unifying potential and want to be associated with American soccer success. Sports diplomacy often provides neutral ground for political figures to appear statesmanlike without compromising their partisan positions on substantive policy issues.
Fox analyst Alexi Lalas called Trump the soccer president as the tournament begins, reflecting how the World Cup timing coincides with Trump's second term. The soccer president label is interesting, given that soccer has traditionally been viewed as less popular among Trump's core supporters compared to American football or baseball.
The soccer president framing could represent Trump's efforts to broaden his cultural appeal or simply reflect the reality that World Cup success transcends partisan politics. If the U.S. team performs well, Trump will likely claim credit for American success, regardless of his personal relationship with the sport.
However, streaming platforms crashed worldwide during the opening night, demonstrating that even major technology companies weren't prepared for simultaneous global demand. The technical failures highlight how live sports remain one of the few content categories that can overwhelm modern internet infrastructure.
The streaming failures represent a significant technical embarrassment for platforms that have invested billions in sports rights. If viewers can't reliably watch games, it undermines the entire value proposition of streaming sports and could drive audiences back to traditional broadcast television.
The technical challenges also reflect the complexity of global live streaming at scale. Unlike on-demand content that can be cached and distributed efficiently, live sports require real-time delivery to millions of simultaneous viewers across different time zones and internet infrastructures.
Ariana Grande rebuked the White House for using her song Bye in an ICE video featuring arrest footage, calling it barbaric, inhumane, heinous nonsense. The White House subsequently removed the track, demonstrating how celebrity opposition can affect government communication strategies.
Grande's response reflects broader tensions between entertainment industry figures and Trump administration immigration policies. The use of popular music in political content often creates copyright and ethical issues, particularly when artists oppose the political messages their music is supporting.
The White House's quick removal of the track suggests they want to avoid prolonged disputes with high-profile entertainment figures who can generate negative publicity. Celebrity criticism of government policies often receives more media attention than policy critiques from political figures or advocacy groups.
The incident highlights how social media has given artists more direct control over their political associations. Previously, political use of music might have gone unnoticed or taken longer to address. Now artists can immediately respond to unauthorized use and generate public pressure for changes.
Crews have begun removing Trump's name from the Kennedy Center, reversing previous recognition and reflecting changed political dynamics in Washington cultural institutions. The removal represents institutional rejection of Trump's legacy in ways that extend beyond electoral politics.
The Kennedy Center name removal is symbolically significant because cultural institutions often outlast political administrations. Unlike policy changes that can be reversed, institutional recognition changes tend to reflect longer-term social and cultural judgments about historical figures.
The removal process also demonstrates how cultural institutions navigate political transitions. The Kennedy Center must balance its federal funding and Washington relationships against its artistic community's political preferences. These decisions affect both institutional credibility and future support.
Now, let's examine what might be our biggest analytical blind spot today. We've discussed SpaceX's IPO as a validation of the commercial space model and evidence that private companies can achieve space exploration more efficiently than government programs. But what if we're wrong about the fundamental economics?
That's a crucial question. SpaceX's valuation assumes continued growth in satellite launches, space tourism, and eventual Mars missions. But what if the satellite market becomes oversaturated? What if space debris concerns force expensive cleanup requirements? What if Mars missions prove far more costly and technically challenging than current projections?
The commercial space assumption also depends on sustained government contracts and favorable regulatory treatment. If geopolitical tensions reduce international launch demand, or if new space treaties impose costly compliance requirements, the business model could become much less attractive. SpaceX's success has coincided with a particularly favorable regulatory and market environment.
Here's what we should watch. International space regulation developments, particularly debris management requirements and planetary protection protocols. Also, watch for signs that satellite constellation markets are reaching saturation or that launch demand from other space companies is declining. If we're wrong about commercial space economics, these would be early warning signals.